Now, Swaminathan said that...
Say it a little louder.
Louder?
Yeah.
Swaminathan said that concentration is not the way to purify the mind because it leads to a hypnotic state. But I was considering this, and now, isn't it, there's Nama Rupa, right?
Hmm?
There's the Nama Rupa. There's the mind and the body. And the mind is what creates the thoughts. What we see is because of the mind. What we hear, taste, touch, smell is because of the mind. So it's the mind that creates a thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
For emotions and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So then a person who is in concentration, watchful of the mind, is watchful of the thoughts that are created in the mind,
mm-hmm.
right? So then isn't tiredness or fatigue, isn't that a thought that arises within the mind and the body responds in such a way? Isn't sleeping... Isn't the thought of sleeping, isn't that a response in the mind? So then if a person is watchful, wouldn't he be watchful of that thought that arises? And so once it does, he would release it?
Well...
So a person who is in true mindfulness will never go to sleep because he is watchful of that thought appearing. Because... it has to be a thought that creates this tiredness or this sleepiness within oneself.
You have been meditating, huh? Huh?
Yes.
Well, there is a little confusion in what you are saying. You see, the thing is, what you just described is not concentration. The word mindfulness is also misleading. What has to be done is really the word satipatthana must be understood. Sati is not mindfulness. Sati is attention. Sati is attention. And sati patthana really is the combination of sati upatthana. Upa means inside, within. Thana is to place. Sati upatthana is to place the attention inside. So I call this introversion of attention. Or there is another word, introspection. So what you have been doing is that. Concentration is a different thing. Concentration means you take a candle flame, you concentrate on the candle flame, or you draw a spot on the wall and you concentrate on the spot. So in a similar way, you can concentrate on your breath also. Some people focus on the nose tip and how the breath touches the nose. Now that is concentration. But focusing your attention within and watching your thoughts, that is different. That is satipatthana.
But then wouldn't sati be considered concentration? Because you are...
Sati
all
is
your...
not concentration.
But if whatever activity or whatever action you're doing, your mind is on that. So that is a form of concentration, is it not?
No. That is, you see, concentration is to exclude other things and focus your attention only on one thing. Now, that is concentration. But if you watch your thoughts, your thoughts are changing all the time. You see, and being aware of your thoughts is not concentration. You might call it being aware, awareness. You see, there is a difference between concentration and being aware. Awareness is different.
But then when each time you dismiss a thought as it rises, wouldn't your mind go into one-pointedness where it will start to slow down its thought process?
That is what all these people say. One-pointedness. That is the... Those are the words that really mislead people. That is not one-pointedness. There is a resting of the mind when the mind is calm. If your mind is not disturbed, the mind is calm. It's like, say, you have a candle flame. When the wind is blowing, the flame will be dancing, wavering here and there. But if there is no wind blowing, then you get the flame just still. Now that stillness of mind is not concentration. You see, when we speak about the mind, another thing that I have to tell you, you are not present in my other talks, that's why. You see, when you speak of the mind, there are two aspects that you have to know. One is your thoughts. Your thought means, say, if you say 2 plus 2 is 4, that is a thought. But there is another aspect. You become angry. That is an emotion. You have a desire for something. That is an emotion. You are frightened. That is an emotion. You are worried. That is an emotion. Now the Buddha used two words for this. The emotional part he called chitta. And the thinking part he called mano. So there is the thinking part and the emotional part when we think, speak of the mind. Now the psychologists also use two words. The emotional part they call the affective. The thinking part they call the cognitive. It's very important to know these two parts of the mind. Now when you said, when you think something happens, but what really happens is the thinking is going on in the brain. It's now the modern biologists and also the psychologists are aware that the thinking is the work of the brain, which is the cerebrum, really what they call the cerebral cortex. That's the upper part of the cerebrum. And when you speak of emotion, say anger, what happens is a message goes from the brain to the gland, what is called the adrenal gland. And then a hormone is secreted into the blood called adrenaline. Now that goes to all the whole body because it is in the blood. And different parts of the body begin to function in different ways. The heart begins to beat fast, the blood pressure increases, then your face, the blood vessels begin to dilate, and that's why your face becomes red. Your pupils dilate, the hair stand on end. It's like, now you'll see this in a cat or some animal like that. When they become frightened or angry, but the intestines stop working. There is a movement in the intestine called peristalsis. That movement stops. Now the body is getting ready to fight. The muscles become tensed. The body is getting ready to fight. Now that whole thing is what it's called anger. So anger is really a physical change. Anger is not just a thought. It's a complete physical change. So when we speak of chitta, we are really talking about a physical change. That's why some of these, if you go to study Abhidharma, they'll tell you that they don't know this difference really. So they will tell you the mind is in the blood. There is blood in the heart, and associated with this blood is the mind. They use just one word mind to refer to, they say hita. But the thing is, the Buddha didn't use words like that. The word chitta refers to the emotions, and mano refers to the thinking part. And so we have to understand that. So when we talk about calmness, tranquility, that we are talking about a state where the emotions are not excited. There is no excitement. There is no emotional disturbance here. When the mind is calm and tranquil. And only when the emotions are not disturbed, that the thinking can be done in a proper way. When you are angry or worried or passionate, lustful or something like that, you can't think properly. You can't think. This is the meaning of moha. When there is lobha and dosa, there is moha. Moha means you can't think properly. Yeah?
So, is it in emotion the connection between an object that you see, hear, smell, taste or touch with the self? Isn't that the reason for the emotion to be there?
Yeah. So the thought is creating the emotion. The thought creates the emotion.
Right, but the emotion is there only because there is some sort of relationship between that object that you perceive through either of your senses and yourself?
Yeah, that's right.
So then if you eradicate the self, then will you have an emotion?
You'll have no emotion, yeah, that's right.
That is also a balance of the mind. Isn't that also a balance of the mind?
Well, it is a balance, but that is the meaning of panya. Panya means correcting the thinking part. Samadhi means correcting the feeling, the emotion part. Samadhi, there is a difference between panya and samadhi. Panya is the intellectual part. Samadhi is calming the emotions. So samadhi and panya are not the same thing. That's the difference. Because you can't get the panya without the samadhi. First you have to calm the mind before you can correct your thinking. So this is why there must be samadhi before panya. And even before samadhi comes sila, there must be sila, which is controlling your behavior, then comes calming the mind, then comes understanding, anatta. That's the point.
There's one, Swaminas, you said that it is very difficult to purify your mind.
Yeah.
I don't really think we should think that way, because that will not help us moving forward with purifying mind. So I think we shouldn't think that it's
difficult. Well, whether you think that or not, that is what is going to happen. If you want to purify the mind, you have to give up your husband and child and give up all your possessions. This is why even Jesus, there was a man who came to Jesus and asked a question. Good sir, what is the way to eternal life? So Jesus said, don't call me good, only God is good. And then he said, if you want eternal life, follow the commandments. So this man asked, what are the commandments? Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not lie, thou shalt honor thy father and mother, and thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Those are his commandments, not the commandments of Moses. This is why I say Jesus was a Buddhist, not a Christian. So, anyway, then this man says, well, I have been following those commandments all my life. Isn't there anything more to be done? Then he says, well, if you want to go the whole way, sell all your things, give to the poor, and come with me. That is renunciation. And then, of course, he was not able to give up. He was a rich man, and he was not able to give up these things. And so, again, Jesus says, even if a camel could creep through the eye of a needle, a rich man cannot enter the kingdom of God. So all that is that same idea, you see. This is Buddhism, really. And the important thing is that while you are with your children and your family and all that, emotions are all the time coming up like that. It's very difficult to be away. But there was a man, he's also interesting. There was a man called Asita during the time of the Buddha. He had been meditating. Why being a layman? He has been meditating very hard, and he comes and tells the monks in the temple, you know, I can reach the fourth jhana. I am able to read the fourth jhana. And if the Buddha says that I am anagami, I will not be surprised. He was really an anagami. And then he says, while I was going on this meditation, you know, I am a rich man. I have a lot of wealth. And I have also 7 wives. Man had 7 wives. And he says, I call my wives together. One day I call my wives together and I said, my dear sisters, when I said my dear sister, the wife started crying. Because, and then he says, I am going to, from today onwards, I will treat you as my sisters, not as my wives, because I have to meditate. If I am going to treat you as my wife, I won't be able to purify my mind. So, if there is anyone who wants to get married to another man, you tell me. And then the chief wife said, give me to such and such a man. And so he called that man and asked him whether he likes to get married to that wife. He said yes. Then he arranged the wedding ceremony and then gave over. Like he says, I gave over this wife like giving over my sister in marriage. And I was not at all displeased or unhappy about this. And he was able to do this. So it is by doing things like that, if you are willing to give up like that, then it is possible to purify the mind. This is the point. So even if you are a layman, you have to do the renunciation as a layman. You don't have to put on robe, shave your head or anything like that. But at least you have to give up your attachment. Without giving up the attachments, it is not possible to purify the mind. Because that attachment itself is spoiling the mind. This is the point.
So during during Buddha's time, did anyone go to Nirvana?
Oh yes, sure. So many.
Layman, I mean.
All the people who became monks were laymen who became monks. You don't have to be born as a monk. No one is born as a monk. Everyone is a layman, and then the layman becomes a monk.
Unless you become a monk, you can't go. You run with that.
No, you can if you do it that way, like Asita, who did that.
To reach the ultimate state of Nirvana, yes, you have to.
Not only ultimate state,
you become an Anagami, Arahat. But to reach the first state, I think you don't have to.
Why do you think so?
What about this?
What is your reason for saying?
In the Buddha's time, there was a Upasika. There was a Upasika named Visakha, right?
Yeah.
And they say that, the book says that she was in the first state, stream entry, but she had children and all. What do you think about
that? To become a Sotapan.
Yes.
You don't have to enter the first jhana.
Not the jhana. We are talking about purification.
Purification is the jhana. Purification. You see, jhana simply means the pure state of the mind. But it is temporary pure. Samadhi is a temporary purity of mind. But it is temporary. It can become spoiled again. It's like you go and take a bath or shower or something like that, and then you purify your body. But the next moment you go and do something, you sweat might come into you and it gets spoiled. So in a similar way, samadhi is a temporary state of purity. But panya is the way to get rid of it completely. Yeah,
but what Tathagata was trying to emphasize was, in Buddha's time, she was a Sotapanna.
Yeah,
but she was living a normal layman's life because she hadn't renunciated.
Yeah,
so it is
Sotapanna can be doing that.
But Mark was saying the ultimate goal.
I'm not talking about the ultimate goal. The first jhana is not the ultimate goal.
So you say that Sotapanna is the first jhana?
No, Sotapanna has nothing to do with the jhana.
Yeah, I know that.
Sotapanna is a person who has given up three things. Sakkāyaditti, vichikicca and sīlabbata parāmāsa. These three things. Now, giving up sakkāyaditti, vichikicca, sīlabbata parāmāsa doesn't mean that the mind is pure. That's the important thing to understand. That's not mental purity.
So how do we know if we attain jhana, first jhana? How do we know?
Well, you have to attain it to know it.
can you explain little bit on that? Say me, explain to me.
Well, there are things called five hindrances. Have you heard about this? What are the five hindrances? There you are. Kamanchanda, Vyapada, Dhinamindra, Uddacha Kuccha, Vichikicha. What's that?
Can you say it in English though?
Yeah, Kamanchanda is the desire for sensual pleasure. That is Kamanchanda. The desire for sensual pleasure is Kamanchanda. Vyapada is hatred, anger. That's the second one. Dhinamindra is laziness and sleepiness. Dhinamindra. Uddacha Kukkuccha is worries and anxieties. Uddacha Kukkuccha. And Vichikicca is a wavering state of the mind.
Wavering of what? Is it Dhamma or?
No, wavering really means that our mind is normally divided into two sides. Our emotions want something. You have a desire or a hatred. These are your emotions. Your emotions are pulling you in one direction. But your reason begins to say, no, 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 that's not right. That is not correct. And the reason begins to pull in the opposite direction. Right? So what normally people do is, they satisfy the emotions for a short while, and then they begin to feel guilty about it, and then they get on to the other side and try to live in the good way. The right way. And after some time they are bored by being in the right way and they want to enjoy a little pleasure and then they go to the other side again to satisfy the emotions. This is the Vichikicca, going from this way, like the pendulum clock. It goes this way and that way. That is the Vichikicca really. Mind is not going in one direction. Now the Sotapanna, that is gone in the Sotapanna. The Sotapanna is going straight on to the right path. That is why he is called Sotapanna, because it's like the log put into a river. It is carried by the current gradually to the ocean. So in a similar way, once you become a Sotapanna, you will go straight to Nirvana. But that doesn't mean that Sotapanna's mind is pure. Because Sotapanna will have Kamachanda and Vyapada mainly.
That's craving and aversion. Huh? Sotapanna will have... You said Sotapanna doesn't have...
What's that?
You said Sotapanna will not have doubt, restlessness and worry, and sloth and torpor.
What? Say it again.
No.
Because I don't understand what you're saying in...
No. I will explain this. Three things. Sakkāyaditti, vichikicca, sīlabbata, parāmada. Don't get hold of these translations. Translations are misleading. First study the Pali words and then try to understand the meaning of the Pali word. If you get hold of an English word, you will go in a different direction.
Okay.
So Sakkāyaditti means, Sakkāya means Swakkāya, you know, the Sinhalese prefix swa, swa, kai. That means your own, kai. But here kaya is not only the body. It is rupa kaya, vedana kaya, sanya kaya, sankhara kaya, vinyana kaya. So whatever you identify as yourself, that's the kaya. So it's your body and mind, everything is kaya there. And what you, I have a word to translate this. I call it the personality perspective. Personality perspective. That means you have personalized the body. Now the body personalized means you call the body mine. Now some people say they can personalize your pen. You put the name on the pen and say this personalized. So personalizing means say to say something is mine. So you say this body is mine. Then if you have any sensation, feeling in the body, pain or pleasure, you say, I have a pain. Now that is you are personalizing the pain. And if you have, if you see something, I see, that means you have personalized what you see also. And if you think something, this is my thought, and then you have personalized the thinking. So like that, you personalize whatever you experience. Now, that personalizing is the upadana. That's what is called upadana. So this is called pancha upadana khanda. That means this whole collection of personalized things. So the khanda is that. Khanda is the collection. And Sakkaya Ditti is to personalize these things and produce the concept of personality. So personality, your personality is what you have personalized. So the totality of what you have personalized is the personality. Right? So if you think in terms of yourself, all these things, this is our, this myself. So that is the Sakkaya Ditti. Now Vichikiccha. Now the Vichikiccha is because you have a desire, you personalize the desire and say this is my desire. And when you think this is not good, that thought is also personalized. So now your personality is divided into two. Your thinking says no, and your desire says yes. That is the Vichikiccha. Then Silabbata Paramasa is today translated in English in the wrong way. They say rites and rituals and things like that. That's not the meaning of what's that? Silabbata Paramasa. Sila, you know what sila is? Sila is sila, which means your discipline. Your sila. Sila is what you don't do. That means don't kill, don't steal, don't commit adultery, don't. That is all not doing. Sila is not doing the wrong things. That is sila. Bata means, bata really means your duties. What you do. That means if you give dana, that is bata. So you don't do certain things and you do certain good things. You don't do bad things and you do good things. So the good things that you do is the button. And the bad things that you don't do is sila. So sila, bata, paramasa. Para, you know what para is? Para is outside. Outside. Para. Para, amasa. You know what amasa is? Now the stomach is called the amasa because that is the receptacle where food is received. So really the word amasa means reception. You take. So paramasa means you take it as something foreign, outside. How can you take sila and bata as something outside? If you think, I am practicing sila because Buddha told me to do so, you are regarding the sila as given by someone else. Now this is what all the people in Sri Lanka do. They go to the monks and say, please give me sila. Because the sila is with the monks, you give the dana to the monks and you take sila from the monks. It's an exchange. This is some exchange that is going on. You have the dana, you give the dana to the monks, and the monks have the sila and you give the sila. It is like, now, on poor days people go to the temple to get sila. So what it is like, you get the sila, sila samadhan, you know, and you can take the sila, and at the end of the day, they give back the sila to the monk and go home. It is like taking a car, rent the car. You go your journey and come back and return the car. And you go home. It's something like that. Now that is the meaning of sila bata paramasa. Because the car, you don't own the car. It's someone else's car, you borrow and you use it and give it back. That is sila bata paramasa.
So what that means is he's not practicing?
What's that?
He's not practicing sila?
No, no, sila is taken as someone else's thing.
No.
It is given by someone else. But the sotapanna sila is not like that. Sotapanna sila comes from inside, from. Now, I was trying to find a word for this, and finally I found it. That is called autonomous. There are two words, autonomous and heteronomous. Silabbada paramasa is a heteronomous discipline. The sotapanna's discipline is autonomous. That means coming from inside. This is why the sotapanna sila, arya sila, it's called arya sila. Arya sila is called aparamatta samadhi sangvattanika. Aparamatta means it is not coming from outside. It is coming from inside. And samadhi sangvattanika means it is going towards samadhi. The sila that goes towards samadhi, not done because the Buddha said so, or the teacher said so, or your father or mother said so. That is not the reason that you are doing it. You have understood, you have sammaditti. Samadhitti, you have understood why you should act in a certain way. And because you have understood, you are doing it. So it's coming from inside. So it's based on your understanding. So this Sotapanna is a person who has got the Samadhitti. And because he has got the Samadhitti, his sila is not coming from outside. That is the meaning of sila pratha parama. Yeah?
So what Swaminarayan is saying that a Sotapanna has gotten rid of doubt, right?
Not doubt. No. Sila. I don't use that word doubt.
But there are three things. Is that what you're
three
saying?
Things. Okay. Not doubt.
So
Sakkaya Ditti, Vichikicca and Silabhata Paramatha. Don't use those translations.
Okay.
If you use the translations, you are going out. Because you are going, that has a different meaning.
So,
this is not doubt.
Sakkaya Ditti is non-self. Sakkaya Ditti is like non-self. That's what you said.
No. Not non-self. No. Sakkaya Ditti. Sakkaya Ditti is the personality perspective. You are thinking in terms of a personality.
Yeah.
You are thinking in terms of a personality. That there is a person involved. Now, you see, if you are seeing radio, you hear someone singing a song, do you think there is that person inside that radio? No, you don't think there is a person inside the radio. When you see TV, you see people jumping and running and all that. But you know that there are no people inside that box. You see? In a similar way, if you can look at me and hear me talking, and if you can see that there is no person inside this box here, then you have no sakkāditti. Did you understand that?
It's not only realizing that there is no I, it's all beings. It's like
what?
It's not only realizing that there is no I, like myself. It's not only that.
Then what is the other one?
It's also realizing outward everywhere that
there is no self. We are just machines. Robot. You know what? This is what we are.
Everything is mind and matter, right?
So I just want to build up on that because that was what I was trying to say before.
Uh-huh.
Because if there is no I, then one should realize that there's a compassion towards others. Because then it's not always thinking about oneself, right? So that is why it becomes outward as well. Because once you eradicate the self, compassion is built towards all beings. And you put them ahead of you.
Well, but then there are other beings, no? You're thinking
right.
of other beings.
There are other beings, but since there is no I,
there is no ego. No, it's not only the I. You have to understand that there are no other I's also. Not only your I.
Right.
So that means there are no beings.
Right.
How can you have compassion when there are no beings? Because the compassion is directed towards beings, no?
So how did Buddha have compassion?
Then why practice my metta?
Where?
If there is.
That is what I am trying to tell you. You see, when you think of compassion, you are always thinking in terms of beings. This is the problem. The real compassion is not talking about beings. You see, compassion is not another emotion, like love. This is not another emotion. Compassion is not an emotion. It is the absence of emotions. The Buddha, there are no emotions in the Buddha. And it is not directed towards any person like that. When the mind is pure, you are free from any of these self-centered emotions. And when the self-centered emotions are absent, you are selfless. And that selfless state is what you call compassion. Do you understand that?
But that does not mean mistreating others.
No.
If there's a selflessness,
there is no other and you here.
Yeah.
There is no other and you.
But there's no other way to phrase that sentence without people being confused. That's why I'm using it.
No, this is the problem. You see, because you are already thinking in terms of a self. So you are always thinking like that. This is the way. But when you are completely free of this idea of self, then that question doesn't arise. Because this metta, karuna, mudita and upekkha, these are not four different states of the mind. It is just one state of the mind, and these are four aspects of the same state of mind. And that state of mind is free of a self. That's what it is.
Okay, we have ten more minutes.
Ten more minutes.
See, are the questions that...
What?
How do we know that we came to the first jhana?
That was the question we were going to ask.
We didn't give the answer to that.
No, the first jhana is where the five hindrances have disappeared.